Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program heard weekdays on 18 radio stations with 27 signals all across the Treasure State. Thanks for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook at Voices of Montana and on the internet at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
2 weeks until this June primary election. A lot at stake here, especially in the Eastern District. We're talking about, well, with our candidates and just letting them give it in their own opinions, these issues that are going to shape our country going forward. And I appreciate you guys being along. Got lots of quotes here that tell us how important our voting is. I think we know that. I think we do know that by now. So today, Ming Cabrera is in studio. He's a Democratic primary candidate for the Eastern District. As we talk about the issues that we're facing across the country, we're looking at the border, we're looking at energy, we're looking at healthcare, we're looking at education, looking at a ton of different things here. James Brown will join us a bit later on. He is a public service commissioner, but he's running for state auditor, so we'll catch up with him again in primary election upcoming. And Ming Cabrera is in studio. Ming, how are you?
Thank you, Tom. And thank you, Johnny. I appreciate your time this morning.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. We've had a great weekend. We've been on the road. Like I've mentioned this weekend, 40,000 roads, 40,000 miles I've traveled all the part of Montana. And I've been and talked to over 6,000 people by knocking and shaking hands and kissing babies whenever the occasion came. So it's been fun.
Well, it's an honor to run, but it's also quite a burden. And I know you're running as a Democrat in this primary. In Montana, you know, it goes from purple to maybe red. It's certainly a very conservative state right now. But what are people talking to you about on the campaign trail?
You know, a lot of the people are just, in my opinion, they're kind of tired of the fights between the two people, the two parties. What they want are answers to the questions that they can bring back to their communities and to the people that they interact with every day. So that is seems to be the most important thing is, of course, they don't say, well, you know, this is exactly what I want. But what they really want is they want, when it comes to the small communities, they want to be able to make a living and keep going.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, well, I appreciate that, you know, and I'm not sure government is always the right choice.
And it shouldn't be. You know? Government is there to help, give a hand. But of course, you know, it's going to be up to us to also make things happen too as well.
People can go to your website, mingforcongress.com, and get more information on that. But talk about your background. Who is Ming Cabrera?
Yeah, you know, I was born in Butte, but I grew up on the Huntley Project. I feel I'm a small town boy, now living in Billings, Montana. Went to medical school in the Philippines. I speak a little Tagalog, not great. I didn't speak it in the beginning.
But if Cody was here, Cody Ross, who's better half is Filipino as well.
Yes.
You guys could, you were doing that this morning, as a matter of fact.
And Siyempre.
Yeah, mostly it was food talk, I think.
It was. It's always about food when it comes to Filipinos. Always about food. So
that's
makes
what Cody
it,
says. Yeah. Yeah.
If you don't have nothing to talk to about a Filipino, just talk to them about food. Yeah, and all of a sudden, they'll talk to you for about an hour. So that's the thing. But back to the community.
Who are you?
Yeah, of what I am. I really believe I'm going to bring hometown values back to Montana because that's who I am. I'm looking at my teachers, what they taught me, why I'm doing this. And I'm doing that because I'm seeing the small communities seeming to come at the seams because we're worried. We're so worried about what's going to happen to our health care, our small clinics, and our public education. And how are we going to transport all these goods and services we need across Montana to make it happen for the goods and services for our places? So, I was a hospital sales rep for 35 years. So being in Montana all those 35 years in that area, I feel I'm a part of every small community. I ate in there. I've been there. I talked to everybody. So every small town, I know somebody. Yes.
And you've run for office previously, and you've chaired the Montana Democratic Party in the past as well.
I ran in the House District 44 in the Heights before. Yeah. I'm on the Montana Water Board. A vice chair right now. I was previously chair. Just local things, but that's where you get a check. There's a difference between public boards and private boards, believe me. It's a huge difference.
I'm going to ask this question because people are looking and we're talking and we're anxious about where our country is going. You know, 75%+ of the companies say, our country will say, it's going in the wrong direction. that's got to be at play. You know, we have President Biden, Democratic president. And if a country's going in the wrong direction, they're pointing to one guy about it. You know, how do you manage that on the campaign trail? How do you differentiate yourself from these national Democrats, which in my mind have really, really gone far to the left?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things is the fact that the way I look at it is Montana only has 4 electoral votes. You know, where the meat and the potatoes are going to be at the Senate and the House. This is where it's going to make the difference out there. And we need a voice in agriculture that's going to talk about the issues that will help our small communities to make it happen. You're right that a lot of people have problems, and I have problems with both far right and far left in regards to what's out there. So the medium is to try to get to where the people are. And regardless of whether it's red or blue, it's the purple that makes the difference out there. And that's the mixture between the two. And hopefully we can take a look at some of the issues on both sides and come up with what is a Montana value.
I think, let's talk about one that is front and center for a lot of people, and it's illegal immigration in this country. And you've probably got a different, experience when it comes to immigration in that regard.
And I'd like to just point out for one thing that I'm the son of an immigrant. My father and my mother came here as immigrants.
I'm the grandson of an immigrant.
And you guys are all immigrants. So, and
Johnny's even from Wales. Yeah.
And so, you know,
he's not illegal, though. And neither were my parents.
Yeah.
And my grandparents.
And that's the question where we're at. We need to look at what we need to focus on here in Montana, because a lot of the people that are coming here can work on the farms on the H-2A programs. We've had the Montana Migrant Program that's been in existence since the 1960s. We've had the people come over here from Mexico, work the beets, work the cherries. Actually, now they're working different areas of Montana where they don't have anybody working the areas that need to be done. We do have problems with people that can't even clean the hotel rooms and so on. Yes, I want to welcome as many people that can come into our country as possible, but you're right. We've got to look at the borders as well. There was a question as to how to do that. You know, there's a couple things. I got a short term answer to that. The short term is more judges. They only have like 60 seconds to a minute to determine if a person's going to be able to get to the borders. So more judges, more patrol people, and those accessory votes or gates, we need to take a look at where they're at. Long term, we got to work with the OAS, some of the organizations where people are migrating from like in Venezuela, Cuba, Honduras, where they've had drought stricken, they can't even afford to work. So maybe that's where we need to look long term to try to help those people. So they want to stay where their family is at the same time.
That's I don't know that solves our problem. Yes, we got to look at some of these
things. Will never solve the problem. Yeah. That problem is getting big, but I've seen people want to just go ahead, and if anybody crosses the border, let's shoot them. That's not the answer either.
Well, who's doing that, man?
Well, I don't know. Yeah.
That's an exaggeration.
Well, we've had people go down there and say, you know what, I'm going to hold a gun here and not let people into the border. And
that's wrong.
Yeah, that's
wrong. But that shows the frustration that we're having about it.
And you're right. I agree with you. And you know you're right, too, in the fact, Tom, is the fact that many people are even coming from China now.
Yeah.
They're crossing the border there. Yeah. And a lot of people, because they want what we have. We have a beautiful country to live in.
I don't blame them for that, you know?
No.
And one of the issues, though, we talk about when we talk about the border is that if we are just a release valve for all of those people trying to escape corruption just grows and grows in that area. If we don't have a presence there, a public presence, pushing back against their leaders, and so it's for me, it's a pretty complicated issue, and we've let it get out of control at this point. And so,
well,
I guess what I'm asking is, I've not heard honestly, Ming, Democrats complain about this until this election year. Who's going to stand up in that Democratic Party and say this illegal immigration, it's a border policy.
It's a problem.
Yeah, that was done by 100, executive orders. Who's going to get in there?
I agree with you, and that's why we got to look at this a lot stronger. And maybe because because of what we're looking at right now, it is an issue, and I'm not going to put it down. And this is what the people of Montana continuously tell me, that we've got to look at illegal immigration. It's okay to come in to our country with a pass, okay, with some type of thing. So absolutely, we will look at it. Absolutely.
It's a tough issue, too. And now we've got them in this country, and we're going to have to kind of do something about that as well. But they're a drain on the resource. And I hate taking that position because it just seems like, wow, you don't have any heart for families and things like that.
No, it is an issue. Yeah. And you're right, Tom. And I think, we've got to look at it. I was talking the other day, or somebody was talking to the fact that here we have a 70-year-old person that's just living on Social Security and doesn't have anything else. And somebody may have a pass and a cell phone and things like that that really this other person can't have. So we've got to find ways to make that administration happen at that point. Absolutely.
Ming Cabrera again. It's mingforcongress.com. But talk about the other side of immigration as well, Ming, because I've heard you speak to that. And it's important for us to understand. Maybe we do, maybe we don't. And we don't want to close that off. But there's this country is full of opportunity.
Yeah, and that's the thing. As I always consider what my father taught me and my family is work hard, get an education, and then you can become part of the American dream. And I really believe that our family represents the American dream because we've worked hard. We don't work really hard. We work intelligently and we work smart. And that's what it takes more than anything. So on the flip side, take a look at the people that have immigrated to the United States and how many of them have actually benefited America in regards to some of the innovations they've had too at the same time. So there's got to be a better way to do things altogether.
He's a lifelong Montanan, born in Butte, he says, and former pharmaceutical salesman. I want to talk to him about affordable health care. It's one of his issues. Chaired the Democratic Party previously, speech coach in the area here. He's from now Billings, Montana. Ming Cabrera is with us in studio here from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. We'll get to affordable health care in just a little bit, but this is your opportunity. So we got those numbers out there at 866-627-5483 and 781-627-5483. We'll go to Columbia Falls. Listening is Chris on KOFI up there. And good morning, Chris. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, good morning. It seems to me, knowing what I know, living maybe a little too long for some people, but it seems to me we've kicked the door open and allowed too much of these socialistic ideas in this country. And unfortunately, you know, the young kids and leaders of this country now have bought into many of these, you know, embraced these kind of weird ideas, you know, that we had put off so long ago. In the Constitution, if you go back to the Constitution, and I won't read all of it, but it says the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land. That's the way we run this country, shall be the supreme law of the land and the judges. Now, you look at some of the rogue judges that we have. No, they are under the Constitution, the very same thing that we're to abide by. And every state, it says every state. Now, it's not just referring to the Supreme Court. It's talking about judges in every state shall be bound. They're bound there by anything that the Constitution of laws of any state to contrary notwithstanding. So they're bound by the Constitution as well. And if you go back to the articles, that was in the Constitution. Then when you go to the other part, you know, is that Section 26, the right of the citizens, that's here's on immigration. The right of the citizens who are 18 years of age or older to vote. Now, these illegal immigrants are not citizens. Mm-hmm. They're not understanding that they have no rights under the Constitution. Yesterday on Fox reported that it sounds like they're going to have them legally to vote. Now, that was the whole plan in the beginning. So now you've got something else making this whole mess worse. And the problem is that we're not looking back in history. Patrick Henry said, for my part, whatever anguish of spirit may cost, I am willing to know the whole truth and to know the worst of it and provide for it. So that's what we're not doing. That's why they are now pushing the envelope to get their way. That's why your job will be so much more difficult if we allow this kind of stuff to happen when there's laws like the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and we don't do enough of that to really get down to the nitty-gritty and learn that American citizens have a right to stop some of this stuff that is encroaching in on our government and our country now.
Chris, thank you for the statement. I appreciate that. And that's a lead-in to you, Ming, about the whole truth. When we're looking, and he's talking about immigration there. And so people are talking more and more open about why was this policy allowed? And now we have all these illegal immigrants. And now there are proposals out there to let them vote in this country, in this next election. That's what people were saying early on that, no, that's not what's happening. It's just out of control immigration. How do you respond to that? It's a tough one.
As far as I know, and what I've seen is every year in Billings, Montana, at the Yellowstone County, people take their oath of allegiance to the United States of America and become citizens. At that point, you are allowed to vote. Anybody that is not an American citizen cannot vote. There's a lot of people that have green cards, people H-1 visas, H-2 visas.
Johnny from Wales?
Yeah. And you cannot vote. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, people may want to vote because they want that right to do this. But until you take that oath of allegiance to the United States of America, you cannot vote.
So then why are there proposals out there? And there are, and I've seen them.
Absolutely.
That want to legitimately let illegal aliens vote in our election.
Well, it could be out there. But the question is, they're out there, and a lot of that maybe just persnickety thoughts at this point, and they're not going anywhere until I see an amendment out there that says, hey, if you're an H-1 visa, you can vote, or you're a green card holder, you can vote. But at this point, those are thoughts. They're not going to happen if I'm in Congress.
It's unconstitutional, yeah.
It's unconstitutional, yeah. And I will make sure that only American citizens can vote.
Ming, I appreciate that. Ming Cabrera, again, it's Ming for Congress. That's all spelled out, M-I-N-G-F-O-R, Congress. .com for more information. And Chris, thank you for that comment. You know, people are up in arms about it, and I am too, because I think it's a deliberate policy that has a nefarious end to it, in my mind. And so it is on people's minds. But I'm going to move on to affordable health care for you.
Yes.
Because we don't have all the answers to legal immigration, but we know that it's going to be something that we have to walk through and work ourselves through, hopefully better than we have over the past few years. Talk about your experience with affordable health care.
You know, that's what I did for 30 years. I was in every community out there that had a doctor, a clinic, or a hospital for 30 years. I saw the physicians struggle and the nurses struggle with prior authorizations. Sometimes they were on the phone for 4 hours to get a drug that a person needed. And so a lot of that has to stop, because it stops a lot of people from being what they want to be. Physicians, because they're dealing with insurance companies rather than dealing with the patients themselves. I want to go a little bit step further and look at Medicare prescription drug policies right now. The fact is, when it comes to Medicare Part C and Medicare Advantage plans, it's a burden to the United States government, because right now the cost on Medicare, which we do pay for every year at about $1.67 per so much, I can't remember exactly. But the problem is, it's become $500 billion industry for the pharmaceutical companies, which I worked with dearly for 30 years, is the fact that they do not allow any discounts on their products at all. So what happens is, when people have to get a medicine out there, guess who's paying for it? And then when they go to the donut hole for 3 months, you find out the cost of a bill. For example, let's just take Eliquis. Sometimes it's $1,200 a month for one drug.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're talking about people, they don't want to pay it because they can't afford it. So can we do this? Can the government of the United States continue to use our Medicare funds to allow pharmaceutical companies to dictate the price of medication, and at the same time to cost prior authorizations, so that the hospitals are out there? And we got to look at it, be blank with it right now. 50% of the community's clinics are broke right now. We've had layoffs here in Billings, Bozeman, in regards to, because of Medicaid decreases out there and Medicare, that nobody can afford either go to the doctor, or the hospitals themselves have problems with the administration itself to make things happen. It's a big deal. And as we get older and we grow older, the only thing people rely on, unfortunately, is Social Security. And when the average Social Security check is $1,600 and your medicine is $1,600, one pill, what do you do? Yeah. Eat or take the pill?
Yeah. And it's not good that we're in that position in
That's
this
right.
country.
That's right.
So how do we push back? And I know pharmaceutical companies, they like to say, and a lot of them are, taxpayer money goes right into their research and development. And they like to say, well, we have to charge this much to make back the research and development money. There's some truth to that, but I also think there's some misleading to that as well.
Yeah, you know, it's there's a lot. Yeah. And being in that business for 35 years, I know all the tricks of the book.
Yeah.
Okay, I know what they do. Oh, for example, their patent runs out. Oh, by the way, that's Viagra. Hey, we'll put a pediatric indication on it and keep it for another 5 years. Viagra.
Yeah.
Of course, I know, right-hearted failure. But it's very seldom used in that regard. But they keep their patent. And in that period of time, they increase their prices 120%. Yeah. So that's the problem we're having there, is the fact that now we're down to, what, four or five pharmaceutical companies that really do have to worry about R&D. There has to be profit. Absolutely. I've made a great living being in hospital sales and doing those things. But at the same time, we have to look at the people. We have to look at what they can afford.
You just get started on healthcare, and you can go down a lot
Absolutely.
Of roads that that need to be addressed. I think our insurance industry needs to be addressed as well, our insurance coverage, and maybe the industry.
And you need
itself.
Somebody that understands that. You have to know the formularies, what the drug is, and a lot of the. I mean, we're talking about $35 insulin right now. Okay, you know, but there are so many different types of insulin that you've got to understand what the costs are when in regard to that. So. That you've got to know it, otherwise you're not speaking about it at all.
I've only got like about a minute and a half left in this. Is that time to talk about not enough residencies across the country?
And I think you mean for and that's our biggest problem right now, is we've got two new medical schools here in Montana, which are fantastic. But people wait 5 to 10 years to get in residencies because we have not changed the increase in residencies for the places out there. So in other words, you can get a 4-year degree, but you got to wait forever. If you can at all, get into a residency program. And again, that is dependent on Medicare progress within these hospitals. So we've got to get those subsidies or get to that period of time where Medicare needs to be given back. And let's face it, our population's getting older. They need more health care. We need to give them prescription drugs. We need more doctors. 45% of the doctors right now are under the age of 50, or over the age of 55. Can you imagine what's going to happen if we don't get more paraprofessionals and professionals out there?
Ming Cabrera, again, in studio here, and we, let's see. Oh, I got James Brown coming. That's it for today. Wow. I need to talk to you more.
Thank you.
I enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much. Gosh, I thought we had more time, but that's right. I got James Brown coming in, trying to get everybody in before the June 4th primary. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you. And it's important. Please vote for Ming. Thank you.
MingForCongress.com. It's Ming Cabrera. Good luck. Thanks for throwing your hat in the ring, too. Appreciate that. Thanks again for joining us for the podcast. Please share and subscribe and let us know what you think. Email me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. And don't forget, we're on weekdays on your hometown radio stations all across Montana. We hope to hear from you there, too.